Welcome to HCCI's Lights of Hope Radio. You are listening to Bricks and Bones, HCCI's monthly talk with builders and professionals who comprise Harlem's real estate community, as well as prominent people of color in the global real estate development community. I am your host, Malcolm A. Punter. I also happen to be the president and CEO of Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement. Today we are joined by Mr. Marvin Pettis, attorney at law, who is an attorney for local real estate developers, management companies, including HCCI. So we have Marvin K. Pettis here from Pettis & Williams, PLLC, a law firm based in New York City, who concentrates primarily in their practice on real estate development, corporate litigation, and various types of law. So, Mr. Pettis, could you tell us a little bit about your practice and the work you specialize in?
Sure. First, though, I want to thank you, Mr. Punter, for having me as a guest here. It is certainly an honor and my privilege to be here and speak with the audience in this manner. Pettis & Williams Law Firm was founded in 2005. My partner, Brian Williams, and I decided that we wanted to form a firm to address the litigation needs of the Harlem community and the New York City community. We do a lot of real estate, commercial real estate development. We also handle some corporate matters as outside general counsel to small and medium-sized companies. And we have a portion of our practice that also handles personal injury defense work on the defense side. And that's about the bulk of the practice. We're down at 111 John Street in downtown Manhattan, Suite 1504. And we have been involved with the wonderful work of HCCI. Correct me if I go wrong, Malcolm, I think since 2011 or 2012, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And they're one of our best clients because of the work that HCCI does and has done.
No, Marvin, your firm, Pettis & Williams PLLC, has been an excellent choice of counsel for Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement. Yes, because of your experience and expertise in law, but you also bring to your practice and your representation of us an understanding of the local community, the faith-based organization that we are, and the many branches and tentacles that our services and organization reaches throughout the community. So, yes, primarily you select an attorney and a law firm because of their legal expertise, but there's an art to it as well, and I think your company, your firm does that art very well in your relationship with HCCI. So we thank you, our board of directors thank you for your representation through our growth at the organization. And we are a not-for-profit organization, but in a sense we are a small business. And I know that Pettis & Williams specialized in working particularly with small businesses. Could you tell us, that being amongst many of your specialties, could you shed some light on, how small businesses or not-for-profits have been affected in recent times in terms of statutes and laws that impact them?
Sure. Small businesses are similar to not-for-profits, as you hinted towards. The difference, of course, is in the term not-for-profit. Small businesses would be those companies that are started by entrepreneurs out of their home or even storefronts and those sorts of things, and they are in need of corporate structure, which we could assist. They're in need of some sort of incorporation or registration, which we could assist there, too. Sometimes they have investor agreements that need to be drafted and looked over. They may need some promissory notes and those sorts of things for their investors. They even may want to incorporate and sell shares, we could assist them with that too. Small businesses are, I believe, the lifeblood of the economics of America, not only New York City, New York State, but of America in general, because most businesses in America are small businesses. And we could help also small business in regards to contract negotiation, leasing, commercial leasing. If they need space, we could help them there. We have been instrumental in talking to small businesses about human resources concerns, including hiring, firing, those sorts of things. We've worked with them in understanding the local and federal laws as it relates to family leave, as it relates to disability, as it relates to workers' compensation, all those sorts of things. So we pride ourselves with the ability to assist in a number of ways. Like I said earlier, we work as outside general counsel. And if there is a matter that arises that we cannot assist with, then we will help find someone to assist. And in regards to the not-for-profit, the not-for-profit piece of Pedersen Williams Law Firm really began with our churches. Our churches have long been clients of ours, and the first church was in Harlem, and then it just sort of grew from that one church into many churches. And churches, just like small businesses, have similar issues. They have hiring and firing issues. They have real estate management issues. They have real estate purchase sales, if not ground lease issues. They have development issues. It's almost just like a small business, except for the tax piece, where some of the churches, if they're up on some of the changes, are reporting on a yearly basis to maintain their exemption. That rule, at least locally, has changed in that it used to be once you were a church, you didn't have to worry about it anymore. And for the duration of your existence, that's not true anymore. You have to actually get your exemption updated or renewed on a periodic basis as a church. So that's interesting to talk about with some of the trustee boards and those sorts of things. So the churches and the small businesses are similar, and we do similar things for them. A not-for-profit like HCCI, which was founded by the clergy and founded by the religious institutions and leaders of our city, has the benefit of not only having the knowledge and the history of the religious side, but also has the benefit of being deeply involved in the development of property and the and providing low-income housing and housing to people who may not normally achieve housing. So we're actually very proud in our representation of HCCI because we are able to address some of the homelessness issues in the city of New York, some of the people who have physical challenges within the city of New York, and those who are financially unable to afford some of the accommodations and buildings and apartments that are being built around this city.
Yeah, affordable housing is critical, and as you know, Mr. Pettis, HCCI recently in December of 2018 completed the real estate closing for the funding and capitalization of a new real estate building. And this real estate building will be called Victory Plaza, and is located at 11 West 118th Street. In the village of Harlem, between the avenues of Malcolm X Boulevard and Fifth Avenue. And that senior housing building was sponsored by HCCI through financing with New York City Housing Preservation and Development, New York City Housing Development Corporation, as well as Wells Fargo Commercial Bank. And these are all organizations, governmental entities, and commercial entities that many of our listeners may not be familiar with. And they may be surprised that a not-for-profit does business with these organizations. Could you explain, you know, some of the complexities of the legal structure of this type of building and how not-for-profits could benefit from participating, and maybe even some of the cautions that you might give to your clients on doing these complex transactions as a not-for-profit?
Well, I think a good way to put that across to your listeners is think of it as a way of the city of New York or the state of New York or even the federal government investing in your neighborhood. And in order to invest in your neighborhood, they're not going to just walk in and build something, not anymore. What they'll do is they'll partner with local organizations, local companies, or local religious organizations, local not-for-profits, to build something for the benefit of others. And if the company or the not-for-profit or the investor or whoever it is that they partner with will do that, some of them will get tax credits where there is a tax benefit that they'll receive. Others will receive grant monies and those sorts of things that is needed to run programs out of some of these projects. There's a possibility to have dual use or tri-use on some of these projects. So set-asides could be for homelessness apartments. So people who are living in shelters now could transition into an apartment of their own. And that could be a set-aside in a building of X number of apartments, along with, of course, affordable housing and those other things. So the key is to look at your property if you are the owner or if you're the church and you have a footprint that you are thinking about. The key is to get some idea of what it is you would like on your property. And then see, by discussing that issue with a professional of your choice, whether or not, for example, HPD or HUD or someone like that would be a good fit to partner with you. Sometimes also there are buildings or lots that are owned by the city of New York or owned by a government agency, and they'll partner with a not-for-profit or even a church or a religious organization to build something there for the benefit of the community. And if you're looking around your community now and you see a community center that is made accessible to your community, but upstairs are some apartments, well, then you're looking at a building that was produced by the way that I'm talking. If you're looking around your area and you see that a church has a new facility to worship in, and around or next to or even above the new church that they're worshiping in, you see apartments, co-ops, or condos, you're also looking at a building that was constructed in or by means of the way that I'm talking, be it with a private partnership or some input by either HPD, HUD, or some of the other entities out there. And so this is how I think neighborhoods can rebuild with investment, time, effort, money by some of these entities and by organizations like HCCI and others who are doing this on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. So thank you so much for that, those details. Mr. Pettis, could you kind of give us, you know, the churches or houses of worship that, you know, are really interested in improving their building or their neighborhood? What are the steps? Should they just jump right in and start negotiating with some a potential partner? or is there a method or steps they should take? And could you explain the steps that it takes and the importance of those steps?
Sure.
Prior to getting into a transaction?
Yeah. If a church, by reason of its body, either trustees or whoever it is that have temporal power over the facilities of the church, if they decide that they want to do something, the first thing they need to do is hire and consult with an attorney that works in this area. The reason you do that first is because that attorney will be involved in vetting different developers who will come to the church and promise you everything under God's sun, knowing that they may not be able to deliver. And this attorney, whoever it is that you choose, and if it's us, if Patterson Williams, it's us, and we will assist in vetting the different developers. Then, once they're vetted, we possibly narrow them down to two, possibly three, preferably two, and then the church decides which one to use. Then there's a discussion as to what the church is going to do with the property. There are a number of ways to do this. One way to do it is to transfer the title to the property to the developer, and then at the end, the developer then transfers the property back to you, but not in the same shape. Basically, the property is divided into, let's say, two shares, if not more. One share meaning the church space, all of the church space could be a condominium, for example, and then the rest of the building or the rest of the units could be condominiums or rentals or co-ops or whatever it is that the developer wants and has decided to build there. So the church transfers title to the property, it's developed, and then the church itself, its space is transferred back to the church itself in perpetuity. Another way to do it is to rent the land to the developer for the developer to build upon, and then the developer or the resulting condominium, co-op, apartment building, whoever they are, the resulting entity there pays rent to the church for an extended period of time. And they call that sometimes a 99-year lease or 99-year ground lease. That's possible, too. So after vetting, the church then has to make a choice as to which vendor to use. The vendor then will have their attorneys talk with us or the attorneys for the church, come to an agreement as to what's going to be built on the property and the payment of money. But before you could go much further, each and every religious organization, before it could do this, have to get the approval of either the Attorney General's office or a judge from the Supreme Court in the county where the church is located. And once you get that approval, which could take anywhere between 3 months to a year and a half, depending upon the circumstances. It's not a fast process. But once you get that approval, then you can move forward with the initial closing and some of the construction closings that have to go on. So you get the approval, you then schedule a construction closing, and then there's another payment to the church. The church then relocates temporarily, and all of that is in the agreement where the developer pays for that, pays for the relocation of the church, and some of the agreements, the developer pays the attorney's fees for the church and other agreements. It's all in the lump sum that the church receives, depending upon what the negotiations are. And once the development is over, the church then relocates. The church property is turnkey, meaning you go in, you open the door, you can have service right then and there. It's turnkey. Everything is built up, built out to your, meaning the church, specifications. And they'll continue, the church will continue with services and those things that churches do from year to year. The other part of the building then continued as whatever it's going to be. Now, it's not limited to apartments, be they condos, co-ops, or rentals. You could do the same sort of project, and the end result could be a charter school. Or it could be office space.
Wow, so anything in the mission of that church. So any mission items that the church might be involved in could possibly come out of the real estate transaction or real estate development project. Charter school, an extension to the church, a housing, a daycare center.
Yes.
So because they own this real estate, the potential is, you know, fulfilling any mission work that they have. That's great.
Yes. Yes. And it's built for them.
Right.
Yeah. Which is which is a great thing.
Is there opportunity for the land and the building to revert back to the church or the house of worship? Is that something that you see often? Sometime down the line?
Sometimes down the line, it depends upon what the initial agreement is. If, let's say, the initial agreement is a lease, a ground lease, one of those 99-year ground leases, well, then, yeah, the potential is that at the end of the lease, it reverts back to meaning the building, what was built there, along with the land, all the fixtures and everything goes to the church. Unless there's a renewal clause in the ground lease. And most times there is a renewal, be it for 20 years, 40 years, or something to that effect. But at the end, when someone's great-great-grandchildren are part of the leadership of the church will get that property, including the building and fixtures and everything on top. That's with the ground lease. If, however, you're talking about a situation where it's a condominium of some sort or co-op apartment of some sort, then the building developer or the end owner will keep the property. There's no revision of title because all debt has been paid to the church. They've been paid, and the church space has been built out to their specification, like I said, turnkey, and there's no revision.
Wow, this is a lot of information. You're giving, you know, some key advice to our listeners. How could our listeners work with you, or you work with our listeners? What do they have to do? What are the steps they need to take?
Well, we're, as I said earlier, we're down at 111 John Street, Suite 1504. Our telephone number is 212-566-2424. And my email is mpettus, P-E-T-T-U-S, at pettuswilliams.com. You just contact us. We could set up a consultation. We'll use that consultation to give you some advice, to give a church or entity, small business, some advice and some direction, and then we go from there. If you need to retain our services to move forward, you could do that. If the church or the business is not ready to move forward, we're always here waiting and ready to go when you, as a client, needs us. So I think, again, the first thing to do for the development of property is to retain counsel, so that way your trustee board or your directors or your shareholders or your officers, depending upon who you are fully informed, and the whole transaction, of course, is transparent, which is important.
Right. And could you just tell if they really want to go this route internally, you know, can the pastor, for example, make a promise, and then that's it? The pastor makes a promise, and they go on with the development deal. Is there some steps that have to be taken for the church to approve?
No, there are some steps. Depending upon the denomination, New York State has religious corporations law. And in the religious corporations law, there are some rules that have to be abided by. in the tradition of, let's say, the Baptist Church, it's the trustee board that has say over the real estate aspect of the church. Now, in some churches, the pastor is on the trustee board. Then yes. But it's by the pastor's involvement is by virtue of her or him being a trustee. It's not the fact that they're the pastor, if that makes sense. And then you have some churches that have a combined board of deacons, trustees, and other leaders of the church, and that combined board, according to that church's constitution and bylaws, gives them the right to make decisions in regards to real estate and those sorts of things. So the first step is to review, look at your bylaws and constitution, and remember you have to abide by that. If the pastor is included pursuant to your bylaws and constitution, then it's fine. But you have to remember that a number of our pastors are actually employees of the church because they receive a salary. They receive a pension plan, those sorts of things. They receive housing, and they're not part of the trustee board in that regard. Now, I'm a lawyer. However, I will say that pastors are placed in houses of worship, and they're placed there because of their vision. And if the vision of the pastor includes something in line with what we're talking about, that holds a lot of sway with whether or not the church decides. However, it's not definitive.
Right.
But it should hold some sway. So
sounds like the members have
meeting,
some say.
Yeah, there's a church meeting. The members, first the trustees will have to vote and decide. Then the trustees, if things pass, will make the presentation to a at a congregational meeting, because it's the members who have to vote and approve it. Once the congregation approves whatever development project we're talking about, then the trustees can move forward, because now they have the approval of the congregation, they can move forward. If a church skips that step, then their actions can be reversed. If a pastor usurps the authority of the trustee board and the final authority of the congregation, some of those actions will be reversed. You do not want to be in a position where you get so far down the rabbit hole that there's no return and you get into a lot of trouble. The best practice is to, one, look at your bylaws, look at your constitution, talk to an attorney, consider the religious corporation laws of the state of New York, and follow those rules and laws accordingly. And if you do that, you have your trustees meeting, you have your congregational meeting, and you can move forward.
A Hollow Congregations for Community Improvement represents churches and other houses of worship, which includes different denominations as well as different religious faith groups. Is it safe to say that this process covers all houses of worship, or is there some differences in approval process particular to, a different religion or houses of worship?
Great question.
Other than Christian
because,
church.
Yeah. Great question, because there are some churches that are governed not by a board of trustees that is within the single church. They're governed by a group of elders that have a parish or a region, or they're governed by a diocese, or they're governed some other way, which just reminds me to go back to what your guidelines or rules say, because if you're part of a faith family that is actually governed by a bishop or a group of elders or some other type of person, then it's that person that would that has to abide by whatever rules that they have. And keep in mind that New York State religious corporation law has a whole section about Baptists. It has a section about Roman Catholics. It has a section about different denominations. And then, of course, there's this catch-all section where it says any incorporated religious organization. That's catch-all.
Right,
so
right.
The religious corporation law actually covers everybody, no matter what your religion is, and no matter what your denomination is, and no matter what your faith is. It covers everyone. And in there is the consistency of having whatever the body is, board, person, whatever the body is, that controls the real estate and the finances of the church, that body is charged with following these rules and then taking it to the overall membership, be they a congregation or be they called something else. And then that membership will take it on and vote or not vote or whatever it is that they would do.
That's excellent. That detailed response and your learned legal understanding of the religious corporation law is very helpful to our listeners. I'm sure we've covered everyone. We've covered every possible house of worship in this discussion, and we really thank you for that. Is there any closing remarks you might want to leave our listeners?
Yeah, sure. First thing, I think that what's really important in our city, in our great city of New York, is remember that there are opportunities for entrepreneurs out there. You just have to look for them. Remember that there is a number of organizations, just like HCCI, although I think HCCI does it best. But there are a number of organizations out there that could assist in housing, affordable housing, in the development of your property if you are a not-for-profit or a church. There are so many opportunities to participate in this process. If you're saying that I live, let's say, in Harlem, and there's nothing that I can do to affect my neighborhood, I think that's wrong. There is something that you could do to affect your neighborhood and to make sure that affordable housing at least has a chance to stay in your neighborhood, and that is get involved. Talk to your church leadership, because most churches in Harlem own the property that they're sitting on. Don't lose that
right,
property.
Right.
But you could develop that property, and you as a member have a voice. You could do that.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Pettis, for spending this time with us and educating our listeners in our inaugural Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement, Lights of Hope Radio. You're listening to Bricks and Bones, which is HCCI's monthly talk with professionals from all walks of life. And this particular segment is Harlem's Real Estate Community. And we wanted to make sure that you hear from HCCI first, you know, the legal analysis from our guest, Mr. Marvin Pettis. Well, Marvin, thank you for your time. As always, it's a pleasure to speak with you. You know, we before we go, I just wanted to give you a last time to tell the audience how to reach you if they need your counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Ponte, for having me, and I again thank HCCI for allowing me to assist for these number of years. And if anyone wants to reach me, again, the firm is Pettis & Williams. We're at 111 John Street, Suite 1504, downtown Manhattan. Our number is 212-566-2424, and my email is mpettis, M-P-E-T-T-U-S, at PettisWilliams.com. And it's been my pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Join us next month for another episode of Bricks and Bones, where you can hear this and more of Harlem Congregations Lights of Hope radio program. at hcci.org.